evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, May 7, 2019. A Kenyan human rights lawyer says both Kenya and South Sudan are responsible for the disappearance of Dong Samuel and Agri Idri.
The police seems to downplay some allegations that have been made by people who were ready to testify on behalf of the family. Especially, I recall a gentleman called John Toplam is alleged to have sought bribes so that he can assist the family trace their relatives.
And the Kira administration creates a panel to settle disputes with Ugandan traders who delivered food to South Sudan but were not paid.
We will, in our committee, make sure that after we verify the list, then we need to talk. Because if you are bringing the food in Numile, where in our border, they have to register it. What truck? What is the number of that truck?
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A Kenyan human rights advocate says Kenya and South Sudan are responsible for the disappearance of Dong Samuel Ruak and Agri Isborn Idri. Aaron Dubi says the families of Idri and Dong have an opportunity to file a case at the East African Court of Justice in Arusha, Tanzania, against Kenya and South Sudan. Dubi says the Kenyan police was reluctant to arrest John Toplam, who had information about the disappearance of Dong and Idri.
The police saw affidavits saying that they had done all the investigations they could, but couldn't trust them. And the judge ruled that we were not able to demonstrate that the two disappeared persons were in lawful or unlawful custody of the government of Kenya. And on account of that technicality alone, that application was dismissed. However, the judge made a finding that they seemed to have been subjected to criminal abduction, which he proceeded to direct the police to investigate. The police did not do anything, or did not do anything satisfactory in our view, because there were glaring gaps, especially for them not being able to follow with their mobile signals from the mobile telcos, and that they did not inquire or investigate or interview people who had been with or been seen with the disappeared persons at the time around which they were disappeared, and that they did not follow on CCTV cameras around the regions that they were said to have been moving at.
Are you satisfied with the way you handled this case?
On my part, I think I am satisfied that I did what was necessary to be done. What I think I'm dissatisfied with is the lackluster attitude of the police. Because being Kenyan and having lived here most of my life, when the police are, you know, serious in investigating certain crimes that are usually either not politically linked or the crimes that affect the political status quo, they are usually very, very effective, and within a short time, they are able to come up with very detailed and sometimes unique information that would ordinarily not be available easily. Therefore, my satisfaction is that the police seems to downplay even some allegations that have been made by people who were ready to testify on behalf of the families. Especially, I recall a gentleman called John Toplam, who was alleged to be an intelligence agent from Juba, who it was alleged had sought sought for bribes, though the bribes seemed particularly low in considering the situation. But this person is alleged to have sought bribes so that he can assist the family trace or locate their relatives. When we informed the police, by way of affidavit, by the way, that was an affidavit filed in court, and a telephone conversation that had been recorded between the person I'm talking about and the witness who was giving a written permission. The police did not pay attention to it at all. The judge was quite keen on supporting us, and they issued an order for, or a warrant of arrest against that John Toplam. But after the arrest and his presentation to court, suddenly the police seemed to cooperate and to be happy to work with him much more than they would with our side.
This case, as it is now, the two governments have been implicated in one way or another. Kenya being where these two gentlemen who disappeared were living there, and then South Sudan is saying on its part that they cannot be blamed because these people disappeared in Kenya. What other options are really left for the families of these two gentlemen?
With the report having come now implicating the two governments, it is possible for some kind of suit to be filed either at the East African Court of Justice in Arusha against the two governments, because the two governments are members of the East African community, or consider filing a complaint at the African Commission in Banjul. Of course, there is the political dimension, which it would seem has not really kicked well enough or at all, because peer countries ought to be able to put pressure on these two countries to say, you can't do this kind of thing. However, I do not quite trust that they are going to have any political action, because one of my theories is that it's possible the regional governments, in their attempt to react or relate with the renewed violence or political crisis in South Sudan, after Riek Machar left for South Africa, it seems to me like they had decided to cooperate with the government of Salva Kiir and ensure that they neuter the opposition that was in existence. That is how people disappeared. And you remember that prior to the disappearance of these two gentlemen, one other person who was alleged to be the spokesperson for Riek Machar, I think he was called James Gadet.
Yes, James Gadet. Yeah, James Gadet. James Gadet Dak.
Remember, he was abducted from his house in Nairobi, apparently by persons dressed in Kenya police uniform, and flown to Juba by force. I think he was sedated, taken to Juba, where he was detained until after the later rapprochement, and I'm told he's out of prison.
That's Aaron Ndubi, an advocate in Kenya and a passionate defender of human rights. He was speaking with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, earlier today. Tomorrow we will air an interview with a South Sudanese legal expert who wants to sue the governments of Kenya and South Sudan over the disappearance of Dong Samuel and Agri Idri. The South Sudan government has pledged $100 million to fund the implementation of the pre-transitional activities following last week's decision by the parties to the peace deal to extend the period for 6 more months. Over the past 8 months, South Sudan's leaders blame their failure to implement the security arrangement on a lack of funds. Dimo Silva Aurelio has this report for VOA from Juba.
The National Pre-Transitional Committee, or NPTC, which oversees the implementation of pre-transitional arrangements, said more than a month ago it needed $275 million to implement security arrangements and other pre-transitional activities. With today's announcement of $100 million, the Kiir administration has now pledged to give the NPTC a total of $110 million to carry out its work. South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makwei told reporters in Juba today that the funds will enable the parties to implement all security arrangements, including assembling, cantoning, training and unifying the different forces in South Sudan so that a unity government can be formed in November. He says the government money will be deposited gradually.
This 100 million is not the last amount. This 100 million will be paid in accordance with the programs presented. Because even if we have the money, we will not transfer the, now we have only 10 million, we will not transfer the 275 million at a go to the accounts of NPTC. That is not possible. but it will be transferred gradually as time goes.
Makoi says the money will be used to fund Chapter 2 of the peace deal, which deals with security arrangements. He says the parties to the agreement unanimously decided in Addis Ababa last week to extend the pre-transitional period for another 6 months, even though the Kiir administration had wanted to form the unity government by May 12, as is stipulated in last year's revitalized peace deal. Henry Odua, the SPLM-IO deputy chairman, welcomed the money pledge by the government, saying it will enable the parties to implement security arrangements.
We would like to have one army to be under one commander-in-chief. During the pre-transitional period of the last 8 months, we were not able to implement these security arrangements. And we hope in the next 6 months, with the availability of funds, we should be able to implement the security arrangement so that we have that one army and one commander-in-chief.
Odua says he also hopes the parties will use the extra 6 months to resolve their dispute over the number of states and their boundaries. Deng Alor, one of the former detainees, says completing security arrangements in 6 months will depend on whether the parties are willing to assemble their forces to be cantoned and whether they reach a compromise on the number of states.
For the last 8 months, we could not implement fully the security arrangements. We could not fully implement the boundaries and the number of states. And these two issues are the issues that which led to the delay in the formation of the government. We hope this time we have only 6 months, and within these 6 months, we hope we'll be able to take our forces to the centers, assembly centers, cantonment centers, and so on. It is not only about money. It is also about the availability of the forces that must go to these centers. And we have to move right now. We should not waste time.
The parties agreed at last week's meeting in Ethiopia that the pre-transitional period will not be extended beyond November. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
South Sudan and South Africa signed an exploration agreement yesterday to allow South Africa to explore new oil blocks in the country. South Sudan's petroleum minister says Block B2, which runs across several states, is estimated to hold at least 1 billion barrels of untapped oil. Wake Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
South Sudanese Petroleum Minister Ezekiel Lolgat Kwoth and South African Oil Minister Jeffrey Radebe signed the agreement in public, but the two ministers did not disclose details of the deal. The agreement follows a memorandum of understanding that South Sudan and South Africa signed last year, in which South Africa plans to invest $1 billion in South Sudan's petroleum industry. Under the deal, South Africa is allowed to explore for oil in parts of Eastern Lakes, Jonglei, Boma, Terkeka, Imatong, and Jobek states for 6 years. In addition, operating companies from both countries will launch a comprehensive aerial gravity survey. Officials say the two companies will drill for oil in areas that saw great potential for finding oil. Gatkwath praised the leaders of both countries for moving South Sudan's oil production industry forward.
The celebration that we are doing today, it is because of the guidance given to me and my brother Jeff by our two leaders, General Salva Kiir Mayardit of the Republic of South Sudan, who is our president here, and President Cyril Ramaphosa of South Africa. We cannot do it without their guidance.
South African Oil Minister Radebe says oil exploration in the new block will begin immediately.
I want to pledge today in front of the people in Juba that I'll spare neither strength nor effort in ensuring that I work together with you, with our teams, so that as soon as possible, we need to see execution, we need to see action, as failure is not an option.
The new oil block covers an area of 31,000 square kilometers. Many settlements are located inside the block. South Sudan's Nile Petroleum Corporation and South Africa's Strategic Fuel Fund will take charge of the deal. The oil industry in South Sudan is dominated by Chinese and Malaysian companies. Recently, African oil companies, including Nigeria's Oranto and South Africa's Strategic Fuel Fund and Russian companies, have started venturing into the oil sector. South Sudan produces oil in blocks 1, 2, 3, 4, and 7, all located in the northern part of the country. Gatkwath says despite the political upheaval in neighboring Sudan through which South Sudan's oil flows to reach the international market, production has not been affected.
The oil is flowing smoothly without any problem. As we speak, the production is going very well and it's going very smoothly.
Gatkwath says oil production has increased to 175,000 barrels per day from 135,000 barrels per day last year. Juba says it wants to increase oil production to 200,000 barrels per day by the end of this year and gradually reach previous production levels of 350,000 barrels a day before fighting erupted in the country in December 2013. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, an outbreak of measles in South Sudan. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
is there anything you completed simply because you were told you couldn't?
Actually, in my life, all my plans, they are all going on well. There's nothing which has defeated me, and people can say, for you, you are just doing this one, you cannot manage. Actually, I've not gone through that experience.
Yeah, actually, there is. When I was in secondary school, people were telling me that I should not take science section, and they said that I cannot make it. So I decided to take it, and I did it. I did science section, and it was very okay.
Yes, actually, when I started my primary school, some of my friends were telling me that I will never get number one. But because I see it was a challenge, but I try my level best. After all, I was number one.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. It's time for our Tuesday health segment, and today we are talking about measles in South Sudan. The South Sudan National Health Ministry has confirmed an outbreak of measles in 11 counties and 3 Rand UN Protection of Civilian Sites. The Director of Emergency Preparedness and Response at South Sudan's Health Ministry says 3 people have died and more than 900 cases have been reported so far. Ding Magot has the story for VOA from Juba.
Measles is a viral disease that normally affects children. Its symptoms vary but usually include fever, dry cough, a running nose, sore throat, teary eyes and skin rashes. Dr. Angelo Gopthorn, the Health Ministry's Head of Emergency Preparedness and Response, says cases of measles, which had become rare, have been showing up in South Sudan for several months.
Since January 2019, the measles outbreak is confirmed in 11 counties and the 3 protection of civilian POC sites, mainly Juba, Bantu and Malakal. And that's true information. Because we used to receive alerts from those locations.
The other affected counties are Pibor, Gogreal West, Gogreal East, Mayom, Melut, Awil South, Tonj North, Awil West, and Awil Center, and the disputed Abyei region. Dr. Thorn says Health Ministry and World Health Organization officials use an early warning alert surveillance system to ascertain where outbreaks are located. By the end of last week, Dr. Thorn says 3 people had died from measles and 908 cases had been recorded.
Among these 908, 846 have been called probable and 62 are actually confirmed. confirmed by the lab. So the number of deaths is not very high, simply because measles used to disturb, and it also depends on the immune system of the child. So it may show serious symptoms, which by time it can also come down and go away.
Thorne says the outbreaks have spread quickly because of lack of routine immunizations, which did not happen for a number of reasons.
A lot of things used to happen when implementing the immunization coverage. Sometimes the population is not fully covered. And we have been having some issues with the road access. So when you move, for example, to Great Up Nile, sometimes you cannot reach some counties. And it has been an issues. These are some of the challenges. Yeah, so when the routine immunization is not fully covered, you will miss some children and they will develop later on the measles.
Thorne says another reason children in some parts of the country have not been vaccinated against measles is because some of the NGOs providing vaccinations are short on funds. Measles is a highly contagious disease that is spread to others through coughing and sneezing. The measles virus can live up to 2 hours in an airspace where an infected person coughs or sneezes. The government and the World Health Organization are planning a nationwide measles vaccination campaign in September this year. For VOA News, I'm Ding Magot in Juba.
The government of South Sudan has set up a committee to verify their claims for payments submitted by Ugandan traders who say they supplied goods to South Sudan before the 2013 unrest. South Sudan officials announced the committee at a meeting with Ugandan legislators. Close to 300 Ugandans demand compensation from South Sudan over goods supplied to the government. Catherine Nambe reports from Kampala.
For close to 9 years, a number of Ugandan companies have claimed that they supplied goods to South Sudan but have never received payment. A select committee set up by Uganda Parliament is examining the claims, which total about $41 million. The committee follows a memorandum of understanding between Uganda and South Sudan, guaranteeing the payment of the traders. Under the memorandum, Uganda is to pay the traders and Juba will repay the loan with 6% interest within 5 to 10 years. Although the Uganda government is examining claims by only 10 companies, more than 300 traders have filed claims. This prompted a meeting between Uganda Parliament's Select Committee and a number of South Sudan officials to verify the authenticity of the claims. Anne-Marie Nankabira is the chairperson of the Select Committee.
These are ones saying that we were at this level of payment. Some had been issued with checks that bounced. Others had bank guarantees that failed. Then we say, can we have this category list to do background check?
Gok Makak Mayol is South Sudan's Deputy Minister of Finance and Planning. He told the Select Committee that his government has set up a 5-member committee to verify the Ugandan traders' claims.
We will, in our committee, make sure that if we verify the list, then we need to talk. Because if you are bringing the food, in Numele, where are in our border, they have to register it. What truck? What is the number of that truck? All this is all there.
The officials on the committee are drawn from South Sudan's Ministries of Finance and Planning, Defense and Veteran Affairs. Matthias Mpuga is a member of the Ugandan committee. He has asked that the verification be expedited since the matter has been pending for so long.
But we cannot pay until the government of South Sudan has accepted that, yes, these are genuine, people that are owed. Otherwise, we shall pay air. So we only ask for the Parliament of South Sudan to move to push the government to have the committee in place to work with our other joint committee from Uganda. That, in fact, we are praying that before we end the budget period, which is this May, the approvals have been made.
Anthony Makana is the Speaker of the South Sudan Transitional National Assembly. He has pledged to ensure that all authentic traders' claims are fully paid.
I want to apologize on behalf of our people that for the suffering, maybe people did not get their payment. I think it is almost 9-10 years, isn't it? It is a very long period. But this parliament will also support our Parliament, Uganda.
The companies that have submitted claims reportedly supplied maize and sorghum to 10 South Sudan states under the Strategic Grains Reserves supplies. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
From Kampala, we move to South Africa, where South Africa's chief opposition party, the Democratic Alliance, or DA, is confident of loosening the grip of the ruling African National Congress on the country in tomorrow's election. The DA promises to voters include clean and more efficient governance, long prison sentences for corrupt politicians, better policing, and an increased in poverty grants and more support for small businesses. But political analysts say the DA has failed to capitalize on the chaotic rule of former President Jacob Zuma, which was characterized by high-level corruption and waning support for ANC.
One opinion poll puts current support for the DA at just 15%. If correct, it's a shocking decline for a party that just 2 years ago ousted the ANC in several cities following local government elections. Analysts say the overall competence of Jacob Zuma's replacement, Cyril Ramaphosa, has been a major blow to the ANC's main opposition. But DA spokesperson Solly Malatsi says surveys showing shrinking support for his party are wrong.
Even in terms of our own internal polling, we are on the right trajectory to maintain our growth.
He's confident that the DA will improve on its impressive performance in the municipal polls of 2016, when it won almost 27% of the vote. But political experts say even the party's traditional white suburban support base is disenchanted with the DA's recent infighting. Last year, it fired its own mayor of Cape Town, accusing her of corruption, and senior DA officials have in recent years made statements that offended many black South Africans. Malatsi acknowledges that cases such as this have been bad for his party.
Look, I think at the time that they happened, they were a difficult period. But subsequent to that, there's been very great momentum in the party to recover some of the losses that may have happened with it. And
research indicates many citizens haven't decided yet which parties to support. Malatsi says the DA is trying to win last-minute votes by emphasizing its excellent record in the only province it controls, the Western Cape. Both independent and state analysis shows the region to be the best in South Africa at managing public funds and service delivery.
For instance, Western Cape has the highest percentage of households with access to water and sanitation. It has the highest number of households with access to electricity.
The Western Cape also has the lowest unemployment rate in the country. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
That report by Darren Taylor brings us to the end of our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Dr. John by Emmanuel Lasu. We've been listening to Emmanuel Lasu with the song about the late Dr. John Grant. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could be here. If you have any comment about this show, you can send us an email. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. If you are going out of Juba Town, where you cannot tune to a VOA FM station, you can still find us on shortwave. Our frequencies are 11850 kilohertz, 13865 kilohertz, and 15180 kilohertz. Please join us for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.